Friday night edition of the Anaheim Calling podcast. We are back for one last round, our last podcast of the season to break down the Ducks facing off against the Kings tonight at Honda Center, the season finale of the Freeway Faceoff, the season finale for the Ducks in what has been largely a forgettable season.
Yeah.
And that's something that we're going to get into as we go along here. But really kind of one of those games that didn't mean a whole lot to either team. I mean, if you really kind of look at it from a big picture perspective, the Kings have one more game after tonight. The Ducks are now done. Mm-hmm. I believe they're actually the first team done for the year.
Yes. Every other team plays tomorrow. And Hardcore Luchador coming into our Twitch chat strong to start the night, saying in other Ducks news tonight, due to his success, Bob Murray names himself head coach for next season.
I loved Eric Stevens' tweet saying he's going to miss the sweater vest look.
The sweater vest is a good look. I actually don't mind it. Props to Bob Murray for that.
Bob Murray's a stylish guy. Yeah. We could all learn from him.
But it's the final podcast of the season, or final post-game podcast of the season. We will have off-season podcasts, but for those of you, jump on into the Twitch chat. Start throwing things in there. This is the final one. Let's make it a good one in that chat. We're reading it. If you want to say whatever you want, whether you want your favorite moment of the season, whether it's different things like that, throw it in there. We'll see it. We'll try to, at the end, kind of find the best ones. But throw in your favorite moments of the season, whether it is from the Ducks, whether it's the drunk podcasts, to be honest. Those are some highlights of the season for me, is getting hammered and listening to Felix try to sing West Virginia.
yes. So, you know, looking at tonight's game, not a whole lot of news to report. Andy Walensky sent back down to San Diego. Outside of that, not really a whole lot of roster movement. Brandon Gouley was injured early in this game, and yes, so he did not return, which is really unfortunate because I was kind of looking forward to being able to see what he could do for one last time this season. But of course, that was not meant to be. So really, just almost nothing in the way of news before tonight's game. I'm sorry if my tone is really subdued here.
Felix,
I need to chipper up a little bit.
Felix is a little bit sad. I think we all can cut him a little slack. As LankB001 asks in our Twitch chat, with how is Montreal doing this evening? Felix is Montreal Canadiens tonight because of Columbus getting a point or 2 points today. We're sadly eliminated from the playoffs. So I know we give Felix a lot of flack for being a Canadiens fan, but let's lay off it tonight. He's mourning. He's in mourning of his team season.
I mean, it's not really, in a way, this season for the Canadiens. It's been great. I think this is one of the most,
they outperformed expectation completely.
Honestly, it brought me back to some of the best times I've had watching this team, which has not been for a few years now. But it's still a tough pill to swallow because, I mean, this is a team that, when Marc Bergevin took over, to me was not that far off from being a true Stanley Cup contender, and they are not anywhere close to where they were when he first started. And so it's really difficult for me to reconcile that, yeah, this season was a feel-good story, but that's because expectations were so low. So
yeah, but
right now I'm just kind of processing all of that, and I'll come out of it,
Felix,
with some type of takeaway.
Look at it like this. At least you avoided watching them get swept by Tampa in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, again, like the playoff berth would have been mostly symbolic. I don't think that, you know, the Canadians were going to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning with their plus 100 goal differential, which is just insane.
Holy crap. That has to be a joke.
I'm looking at the standings, and it says plus 100. The next best team is the Calgary Flames at plus 64.
That's
36 goal difference.
By the way, Lockdown Late Night, Justin, a really good friend of the pod, came to the watch party, gave us a pickleback shot actually at the watch party. So shout out to Justin. Said, this is specifically at you, Felix. Take some solace in knowing that the Habs are the most winning organization ever, and remember that that is the reason no one outside of Quebec likes them.
I mean, sure, I appreciate
it,
that.
It was a compliment.
Sure if it was meant to be a compliment.
It was a compliment. That's a nice thing to be said.
It's just tough because I just look at that team, that organization, and they have good prospects. Carey Price is still very, very good. I'm more of the mind now that he should be on the Vezina ballot than ever. I think he was a big reason why they were even in this race. But all this to say, you know, it's still kind of unclear what the next wave will be for them. And they really need a star in the making. Kotkaniemi might be that guy. He might not be, but I don't know. It's just hard. It's hard right now. So I need to live it up. Let's bring it back to the Ducks here.
There's enough Montreal calling for all of you out there.
Yes.
People with the amount of Montreal we just talked should be drunk based upon the drinking game.
Yes. But so again, with the Ducks tonight, not a whole lot of news to report. And you know, this game again, not meaning a whole lot for either squad. The Ducks defending like it didn't mean a whole lot early in this game. Final shot count was 46-33 in favor of the Kings. So it was a bit of a hearkening back to some of the not-so-glorious days of the middle of the season.
Yeah, although if we want to, let's jump ahead a little bit because I have some heat maps up on the screen that I'll show to people. The thing the Ducks did well is even though the Kings had a lot of shots, they were kind of from all over the place. Mm-hmm. If you look at the heat map, it's not really focused in one area, and this was one thing I specifically noticed during the game, is the Kings were really just kind of looking for point shots and then trying to get tips in front of the net and get rebounds. And so you're seeing mm-hmm. that with kind of heavily concentrated areas near the points and then also another somewhat concentrated area in front of the net. So that means that the shots from the point were creating some rebounds. But you and I actually had both listened to the newest HockeyPedia cast with mm-hmm. Kevin Woodley. And did you catch mention?
Really good.
Did you catch mention of this? That Kevin Woodley said you have a higher percentage chance of scoring on a shot from below the goal line than you do
right.
with a point shot. I think it's an unscreened point shot.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Goalies are just so well trained nowadays that something like, you know, below the goal line is just more unconventional, whereas something that they can see in plain sight from the point. They practice for that all day, and they're going to stop that every time.
Yep. And so I think that kind of lends a little bit of credence to the fact that point shots aren't the greatest thing in the world. If you get screens, mm-hmm. it's good. And obviously, that's what everyone says. You got to get the screen. You got to get bodies in front of them. But just mm-hmm. taking a shot from the point to take a shot from the point isn't always the best idea, even though we do focus on shots.
So what was interesting about that podcast, and so Jake and I had a real good conversation last podcast about
both on podcast and after we kept talking for like an hour
about the Vezina Award. You know, Kevin Woodley, who's obviously very, very knowledgeable about the goaltending position in the NHL
nowadays, he's one of the best out there,
was asked by Dmitry Filipovich about John Gibson and the season he's had, and he kind of fell back on what he was saying about he's a little suspicious of a guy's performance if the backup behind him is doing just as well or is performing very well. And it was kind of interesting because I don't know if he was just saying that because he hadn't done a lot of research on John Gibson. But that was something that he was mentioning, is that one thing that kind of raises eyebrows for him is, well, what does that say about a starter if the backup is doing just as well, albeit in more limited action? And sometimes that can make him question if the success of the starter is more so based on the system, the type of system he's playing in, as opposed to his own play. Now, of course, my own thought when I heard that was I think that Ryan Miller isn't necessarily a run-of-the-mill backup because he was a very high-quality mm-hmm. starter for a long time in
Agreed.
His career. So I don't think he's necessarily representative of that demographic per se, but at the same time, I think it is a valid point in general. I just don't know if it necessarily applies to the Duck situation.
Yeah, and I think it depends on a lot of context. It depends on a lot of different things that come along with that, because I think Ryan Miller, you look at games played, you look at situations he's put in, and I think one thing you have to evaluate is the games that they're playing in. A backup sometimes he'll get the easier matchup. Sometimes he'll get the also worse situations on the back end of back-to-backs. And so I think that there's a lot more that goes into it. And that was the one thing, and I love Kevin Woodley. I think he's, like I said, one of the smartest guys out there when it comes to evaluating goalies. I have listened to him on a couple different podcasts way back when, and it was back when Gibson and Anderson both first broke into league, and he had a really good breakdown of the difference in styles between the two, and I think he was pretty spot on back then. I think that Gibson, he was kind of very critical about the athletic, that Gibson relied on his athletic ability a bit too much, and it kind of got him caught. And I think that Gibson has been able to kind of rein that in a little bit over the years and been able to make himself better. But I think that that was what kind of this whole concept of the backup goalie and that whole thing was kind of put out there by Kevin Woodley. But I think it was done without exactly having the backing behind it and the full thought process. And I think you kind of heard him from that when he had a qualifier saying, like, I would really need to dive back into the numbers on him and really take a look at it. But that's the first thing that kind of comes to mind. It was kind of his first initial thought.
Right. I mean, I don't, what he was saying just in terms of starters and backups both doing well, I think that to me, I'm going to trust that he's not just saying that to say it, but maybe it pertains to Gibson and Miller, you know.
Well, that's my...
That could be a different situation. But again, I mean, I found it interesting that he really did not spend a whole lot of time talking about Gibson for the Vezina.
He did talk about Darcy Kuemper a fair amount, which I found interesting.
Which for a guy who spends that much time thinking and writing and analyzing goaltending with way better stats that we don't have access to, I just found it interesting that Gibson was kind of like not a big part of that conversation. But it is what it is. Goaltending is a very difficult position to evaluate in the sport. Now, one thing that is becoming increasingly less difficult to evaluate as the season is now over is the play of Max Jones. I mean, two primary assists tonight, and the assist on the goal by Corbinian Holzer to put the Ducks up 2-1 halfway through the game, halfway through the second period. I mean, this is one of the better assists you'll see in the NHL. I mean, and this is kind of, it feels weird to say already, but it's kind of like vintage Max Jones. This is what we've come to expect of him. I mean, you know, brings that puck up along the wall, going up to the point, and then just curls back, just a hard curl, just slams on those breaks, goes to his backhand, and then really protects that puck and just takes it all the way to the net, immediately goes to the net. You know, you'll see some guys pull off that curl move, but then they'll stay wide, they'll stay on the perimeter. He uses that space that he's gained to actually gain an advantage going to the net, and then just feathers it across to Corbinian Holzer, who is reliving his days as a forward in this situation. And a nice tap and goal to put the
Ducks
up
2-1. And I do want to give a shout-out to our good buddy, one of our defensemen for Team Anaheim calling on Podcast Classic, the Scottish wonder, Kestrel Scott, who has some German blood in him. And because of that, Corbinian Holzer is one of his favorite players. And so I want to give him a shout-out because this potentially is Holzer's last game as a Duck. He's taken a lot of flack from people for defending Holzer over this year. And he was there to see Holzer potentially score a goal in his last game for the Ducks. So want to give a shout out to Scott, and I hope you enjoyed that goal.
Well, if you're a Holzer fan, you'll probably get to see him at the World Championship this summer. He sounds like he's going. It sounds like it's all but confirmed at this point. So if you're a big Corbinian Holzer fan, you'll definitely have another opportunity to see him in the near future.
There you go,
but
Scott.
Back to the topic of Max Jones. I mean, I do want to mention his assist on the first Ducks goal of the night for Carter Rowney. Again, just another nice play, winning a battle in front, playing it back to Rowney between his own legs to put the Ducks up to tie the game 1-1. And I don't know. I mean, Max Jones, to me, again, just really, really finishing this season strong. And I am now excited. I'm going to re-download AHL TV to watch this Gulls playoff stretch because I think it's going to be worth watching.
Do we turn this into a weekly Gulls recap pod?
San Diego
playoffs?
Calling?
San Diego Calling weekly Gulls recap?
We may... Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. We may be reaching out to our good buddy John Broadbent for some help there. We'll see. We'll figure it out.
We may be doing a little something-something. But with 3 minutes left in the second period, Daniel Sprong, who I think, I hate to use these sentimental terms like deserved, but I think he has been playing some good hockey lately, and I think that he earned This goal, his 14th of the season, a career high, all with the Ducks.
In what, 43 games?
Yeah. I mean, I just think that, you know, with the way that he's played, again, I know that, you know, Eric Stevens had that good article the other day laying out kind of the Ducks roster future, which is something that we are going to get into here tonight. I think that Daniel Sprong has played his way into at least being in the mix next season, no matter how you look at it. And so 14 goals this season in 47 games, only 5 assists, though, 19 points overall.
Per rate to about a 24-goal season.
Yeah, I mean, still a good season overall. And so he's coming down on the rush with Devin Shore, who makes a nice little dump-off pass. Daniel Sprong doing what he does best, just unloads a one-timer on net and beats the Kings goaltender Jack Campbell to put the Ducks up 3-1. And then halfway through the third period, Jakob Söderberg, who once again, I mean, I think it's pretty fair to say second half of the season, Jakob Söderberg, best Ducks player.
Did he single-handedly tank the Ducks tank? let me rephrase that. Did he single-handedly sink the Ducks tank?
No, I don't think so.
I think he pretty much, he got close to.
No, I actually disagree with that, because I think that with just the nature of the sport, one player, it's really difficult to have that kind of influence. And also, that's not what tanked the Ducks. What tanked the Ducks tank, so nullified their chances of totally bottoming out, is just that they didn't continue to be the team that they were.
They fired Carlisle. The season,
they basically just became a normal, below average NHL team again.
Instead of a
historically bad NHL team.
Speaking of being historically bad and talking about the one and only Randy Carlisle.
Well, hold on a second. Let's just finish up with this with the Söderberg goal.
Fine.
So Jakob Söderberg, shorthanded, finds Sam Steele, a really nice feed into the slot, just kind of goes in, draws the defense, and then just feeds it back against the grain to Sam Steele. Again, really nice chemistry between those two, as we've talked about. To me, it's not one of those goals that's going to make the highlight reel. It kind of shows just how shitty the Kings defense has been this season. But it's a really nice play. And again, for Sam Steele, a guy who I was pretty down on for most of the season, he's finished on a really good note here. I did want to underline that.
And I think we saw all of the kids played well for the Ducks down the stretch. And I think a lot of them really kind of had their stocks rise. And I think that's what you want to see, because we saw development, we saw improvement, we saw not only with the Ducks, but with the goals. If you look at kind of where they were at to start the year to where they ended up now, they really, really improved. And I mean, look at Max Jones, for instance. I think we were pretty low on him coming into the season, to be honest. Part of that,
we just didn't know. Just didn't know what, we just hadn't seen him. And so we ended up getting to see him. And to your point, he's looked really good.
Yeah. And so, really quickly, what I wanted to mention though, I found this very, very, very interesting. Broadcast. I'm now trying to recall exactly when it came, but they were talking about the Ducks' play, and specifically within their own zone, and how essentially kind of the Ducks have improved their play. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a very and they said since the coaching change, the way they worded it, sorry, was since Bob Murray took over behind the bench, no mention of coaching change, firing, anything like that. But a big reason for the Ducks' improvement has been a change in the defensive zone structure.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, this is something that they've talked about a lot in terms of the Ducks, you know, going from a team that played a man-to-man defense to a zone defense where guys are assigned a zone, kind of an area of the ice that they are responsible for. And then from there, you know, you're not so worried about marking a man.
Yeah.
And what's interesting to me about that, and I haven't really delved into the film.
I haven't either.
It kind of checks out just based off the numbers, but I haven't really delved into it, so I can't totally sign off on that. But what's interesting hearing that, especially from a guy like Brian Hayward, who watches a lot of hockey, played in the NHL, I'm going to trust that kind of stuff if he says it, is that if you go back to the Colorado Avalanche under Patrick Waugh, who were one of the primary examples, kind of like this year's Ducks team pre-Bob Murray being behind the bench, as one of the true train wrecks of the analytics era in terms of being so porous defensively, is that they were cited as being a team that played that man-to-man style, man-to-man defense, and that guys going into camp, you know, for Patrick Waugh said, wow, I haven't played this style of hockey defensively since junior, right? And which is, of course, makes sense because Patrick Waugh was coming back from coaching in junior with the Quebec Remparts.
Yeah.
And so it's just interesting to hear that this style that is at best antiquated is also one that the Ducks were using. Now, again, it's hard to say if that was truly the issue because, again, the Randy Carlyle has been the coach of this team or was the coach of this team for 3 years, and it only truly bottomed out this year. I mean, you'll recall the first year that he was coaching, they made it to the Western Conference Final.
I have theories.
Of course, how much of that was actually him? We can, of course, debate that all day long, but it's not like their strategy, their tactics was completely submarining them. It's tough to put this entire season on Randy Carlyle. Do I think he was a big part of the issue? Yes. And I think that what has happened since he has left is a testament to that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no denying that the way that they were playing, it has to fall on him. It has to be, I mean, he's the coach. He's the head coach. He's the one making the call. And so I think it definitely has to fall on him at that point.
Yeah, and I think my theory, and this is something kind of I don't know if I've put that out there on a pod or if it's just simply something I've mentioned in our Slack chat before, but you look at the stats of the Ducks team over the past three seasons, and yes, part of it is obviously going to be due to injury. That does play a part in this, but it's a gradual decline from where they were the first year under Randy Carlyle to where they've ended up this year. And I think a lot of that, honestly, part of it is due to aging because the Ducks team was old. Teams get worse as they get older. But just a quick note
on the aging. I mean, it's not just that they've aged. They've had guys who are playing key roles, aka Ryan Kessler, not just age, but basically be done as useful NHL players. I mean, that's drastic.
Well, yeah, and so, but on top of that, I feel like you've seen this team go from being essentially, it was almost more or less a Bruce Boudreau team when Carlyle first took over. And the stats were slowly declining from where they were under Bruce. And it's just the slow decline from there. And so it feels like as time went on, the team we got this year was a Randy Carlyle team. This season's team was the Randy Carlyle special. We've seen it in Toronto. We've seen it in Anaheim. We've seen this multiple different places. Relied upon strong goaltending, and that was the only way that they were going to win a game.
Right. I mean, I also think that this was by far probably the worst roster in the 3 years that they've had Randy Carlyle as the coach. I mean, if you factor in the fact that Ryan Kessler is basically done.
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
I mean, I think this is probably the worst that they've had.
They also had the best goalie that they've ever had, though. I think Gibson this year was better than last year.
Yes. I mean, to me, okay, so let's just kind of wrap up for tonight's game. Again, after that goal, Ducks have the lead, are able to hold on, cap it off with an empty netter. That'll do it for tonight's game. Ducks end up taking it. Final score, of course, 5-2 in favor of Anaheim. But now, you know, we've talked a lot about, we've broken down 82 games this season. We've talked a lot about, the play. But now it's all about next season. And not even next season. Now it's about the off season. It's about looking ahead and what this team will do. And I think that, like you mentioned before, like we've kind of been discussing before, we can really talk about the future. Part of prescribing a solution is understanding the problem, understanding what went wrong with this version of the Ducks. Because, yes, they ended on a positive note. Yes, it's great that Max Jones, Sam Steele, Troy Terry look good, but they alone are not going to solve the issues. There's a lot of issues with this team, and that's just part of the solution.
So let me ask you this. Something that randomly popped into my head because it kind of comes to mind because we have actually a pretty good example of it from earlier in the year. How big of an impact does Andrei Kosha have on this roster? Because you look at when he was out earlier on in the year and he came back to the roster, he came back and was the best player on the team and impacted the team in terms of winning games. How much of an impact does him coming back next year have? Because you have to remember, Kasha is still relatively young. I'm going to actually look it up because I don't remember how old he is actually off the top of my head. But he can't be older.
He's 23.
He's 20. Is he 23?
Yes, he's 23. Turns 24 at the beginning of next season.
So he's going to be 24. So he still has another year or two of progression, at least, in his in his career path. And if he already was one of the best players on the team, kind of where does that leave him? And does how much does that help the team having him back?
Well, to me, what's worrying is that he is one of the best players on the team. I mean, all due respect to Andre Kasha, who I love as a player, love watching him play, but the fact that a guy who just kind of came out of nowhere that I don't think anyone was expecting to be any good has turned out to be this important, I think that that's both a great thing for him, but also says a lot about this overall roster.
But I don't know if that says a whole lot about the overall roster as much as it says that he's just good.
Well, yes, he is. Like, both can be true. He is fair. Just good. He does make any team he's on better, in my opinion. But at the same time, I just think that for him to stick out this much says a lot about this team as well.
Yeah.
Right? It's a bit of both. And so, and again, so that's a bit looking ahead. So let's kind of stay on what went wrong this year. So obviously injuries, right?
Yep.
We can't discount that.
Lewis brings up in our Twitch chat, and I think it's an interesting topic. I hope the injury problems will be less of an issue next year since the Ducks won't be playing more than 82 games. My opinion on it is that I actually feel like the Ducks will have less injury problems next year. And I think the one of the reasons, yes, injuries sometimes are just pure bad luck, but one of the reasons why this Ducks team has had so many injury issues the last two seasons, specifically last year and then this year also, is you look at the guys that are hurt. They're guys mainly in their 30s that get hurt. And so it's the team next year, if everything goes according to what we think is going to happen, where they go or Ryan Kesler goes on long-term injury reserve, you have Patrick Eves going on long-term injury reserve.
Corey Perry with a new knee. Basically.
Corey Perry with a new knee. You only have two players over the age of 30 on this team.
Right. Right. Well, and that's the thing. So I think injuries played a pretty big role. I also think that categorically, and I don't use that term often because it's not always accurately used, but I think it checks out here. Categorically, the Ducks' changes this season, the things that they tried to implement, did not work. And
yes.
there's a couple of specific things that I want to point to.
Go for it.
One is changing the defense pairings. That's the one that sticks out like a sore thumb. Lindholm and Manson have been one of the best shutdown pairings in the league for a couple of years now. The Ducks decided that that was not what they wanted to do going into the season. That's fine. You should never be so married to an idea that you're not open to anything else. But that was a good idea. That was one that was working.
Yeah.
So they tried something different. And, of course, when you try something different, things are going to be difficult at first. You know, there may be unexpected consequences. You want to at least see it through. But the splitting of Lindholm and Manson and putting Lindholm with Montour and then Fowler with Manson was such an unequivocally just agreed-upon disaster. Everyone agreed that this was just a complete misstep. You could see it on the ice.
Yeah.
You could see it in the numbers. Unequivocally, this was just a disaster.
Yep.
Up front, you know, they tried to make some changes there as well. And, you know, what was in the reverse, what was frustrating about that was it felt like some of the changes were positive, right? Like breaking up the shutdown line of Kesler, Cagliano, and Silverberg. And they but then when things got a little rocky, right, they went back to it. And to me, another misstep, because Ryan Kesler wasn't capable of playing those minutes anymore, and yet they were still trotting him out like he still could.
It wasn't really until the coaching change happened that his minutes started to get limited at all.
Exactly. And so to me, I just think that you can just look at these things, and they're black and white. This isn't you know, people think that, oh, you just don't like Randy Carlisle, he's old school. No, there are things that you can legitimately point to that did not work. And it cost the Ducks their season in some respects. And so all of this to say that I think that that's where things went wrong. Now, I think, though, that the healing has begun. Trading Brandon Montour, an important first step, you know, in healing that blue line. I think that he was a negative. Even with a new coach, I think he would still have been a negative. And so I think bringing a guy like Gouley kind of sets the clock back a little bit more. But now the big issue that the Ducks face is that they no longer really have the vaunted depth that they had on the blue line like they used to, right? You basically have that nucleus of Fowler, Manson, and Lindholm, and then you have Brendan Gouley. And outside of that, you kind of have a hodgepodge of guys who could be something. Josh Mahura could be something. Jacob Larson is something. That something might not be that exciting. You know, Jacob Megna, these guys are, you know, they're depth guys at best. And so that's an area that you want to see bolstered.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How do you do that? And the thing is, we've talked a lot about maybe you trade Adam Henrik to improve your blue line depth. Okay, that's fine. But then if you trade Adam Henrik, now you have a new hole, right? Center depth. If you look at the Ducks center lineup right now, Getzlaff, Henrik, Steele, and then after that, I mean,
Rowney and Shore.
Rowney, Shore, and Shore wasn't even brought in as a center.
No.
He was acquired as a winger. So if you trade Henrik, you have a new weakness all of a sudden. And so all of this to say, the continued solutions aren't so clear, at least from a trade perspective. So my question to you is, how do you keep moving this thing forward? Is this a summer where maybe less is more for the Ducks, where, you know, change for the sake of change maybe isn't the right call? Is it more about bringing a coach, seeing what happens with the new coach, a new direction? Or do you still think that there needs to be more changing, more kind of rejiggering of this lineup? What do you see as the kind of next step? Because I think that this momentum has to continue.
Yes.
Even if that momentum is simply standing pat.
Well,
I think that something has to happen.
I honestly don't think they're going to stand pat. Because if you remember, Bob Murray had a quote right around trade deadline where it was after the trade deadline was over, and I believe it was his like first interview afterwards, and he basically kind of more or less said, hey, I know if you look at our team right now, it might not make complete sense, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that the righty-lefty issue with the blue line and a lot of different things there. And he said, but don't worry, this is not a finished puzzle right now. We still have more to do.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still looking at doing more.
Right.
And so I think there's still going to be more to come. I think he wants to keep moving some pieces, move some things around. I think Tuesday plays a big, big part in that with the draft lottery. I do think we have an interesting question that I think kind of goes along with looking at this team and kind of looking at what went wrong, what happened. Really quickly, I do want to mention before this question, on 31 Thoughts, Elliot Friedman mentioned that he thinks that there's only one team in the league that doesn't use analytics, and it's the Ducks. And I find that very interesting because of a couple different notes. First off, that would probably lead to the reasoning to why they would not put Manson and Lindholm back together, because they're not looking at that type of stuff. The other thing is, Dallas Eakins is known as being a guy that's a proponent of analytics, that likes them, that uses them. I mean, him and Tyler Dello were close. Like, you know him and Tyler Dello talk on the regular, and he's definitely learned some stuff from him and utilizes them and has mentioned he's been on TSN Hockey Analytics before. So if Dallas Eakins is named the head coach, which I'd put the odds at put it at 95% chance he gets the job right now, does that change? Do the Ducks look at bringing in an analytics department?
I don't think so, unfortunately, because I think that having an analytics department is more of an organizational decision. And so no matter who you have behind the bench, that's not really the coach's call. I think that the coach can have their assistants, like their video guys, doing maybe some number crunching. But just to kind of answer the question here, I do think that they could bring in some guys to do it. But if you look at what teams like New Jersey are doing, bring in a guy like Tyler Dello.
Yes.
If you look at what Carolina is doing, bring in a guy like Eric Tulsky to flesh out a department. Because having an analytics department isn't just having a guy who's on Corsica looking at numbers. It's having a guy who can code, right, who can scrape data. It's having a guy who can visualize the data. It's having a guy who can interpret the data. And then it's having a manager who can kind of put that team together. So it's a full-on investment if you really want to get the most out of it, right? There's a lot that goes into having an analytics department that's going to be a positive, not just one having one for the sake of having one.
Yes.
To pay lip service to the people on Twitter who are going to scream about it.
But let me ask you this. If Dallas Eakins were to come to Bob Murray and say, hey, this is a tool I like to use to improve the team. It helps me better understand my team and get more out of them. Can you bring in someone that can provide this? Would Bob Murray say no?
Well, we've seen Bob Murray be very accommodating to his head coaches in the past.
Yes.
But I don't know about that, because who knows how much Dallas Eakins currently uses in the AHL. I mean, I can't imagine he has access to a ton of statistics down there. And so, you know, you just get hired as, and this is your first shot back in the NHL after years of being kind of cast aside. Do you really want to start asking a team to start? You know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I see
But
that
I wonder
happening.
How much of it he's kind of putting out front.
I don't know. If I were him, if I were advising him, I would say, hey, you know, maybe year one, just like keep that a little on the low. You know, year two, if things go well, you know, in year one, then yes, like go a little more whole hog. This is just in your best interest here, Dallas.
Yeah, fair, fair.
So the thing is that, again, I don't know if, you know, we don't know if that's true or not, because I remember a couple of years ago I had poked at the Ducks on Twitter about this a little bit, and their social media manager, AJ, I think
Mandericchio. Mandericchio.
Yeah, he got back to me saying, yes, they have something and they produce cool stuff. So, you know, I don't know if that's true or not.
Elliot said he believes, not that he knows. Right. So
right, exactly. And Elliot says a lot of stuff, you know, and he's also said how Bob Murray is very vicious when he says stuff that isn't true. So, I mean, obviously, Elliot Friedman is extremely plugged in, so he's not just saying that because he, you know, he's just saying it to say it. So we'll see. I mean, the things that ail the Ducks don't require this deep statistical analysis, you know? I mean, I think, though, that if you want to be a team in the modern NHL that's going to be one of the best, you have to invest in this because everyone else is doing it. It's an arms race, you know? I mean, that's just – this is not one of those situations where, you know, it's the old expression, zig where everyone zags. That doesn't apply here because teams are just getting more information. They're getting more – ways to understand the game. So and avoiding that doesn't really, because everyone else is doing it, doesn't really make you any better or wiser.
I mean, at the end of the day, all the analytics movement is trying to do is collect more information and provide more information.
Well,
Well, it's not only that, but it's to provide edges. You're trying to find edges that you can exploit that other teams have not. You're trying to figure out ways that you can make your team better in ways that other teams aren't completely. And so you're building these analytics movement trying to because everyone knows Nikita Kucherov is good. Everyone knows that Ryan Getzlaf is good. Everyone knows that the good players are good.
Kasha, for example.
Exactly. What you're trying to do is find these diamonds in the rough. Find these guys that are a little bit kind of more underpaid, more undervalued, and if they're just not being given the opportunity or put in the right opportunity, and or they're just getting a bit unlucky. And then they finally get that time to thrive and get more time on the ice, and the puck starts going in. You look at Andre Kasha. Kasha, I mean, now I'm trying to think how many goals he had.
Andre Kasha did not start getting regularly into the lineup until he started scoring goals.
Yeah.
He was already carrying play, you know, helping influence the shot attempt battle, but he didn't really start getting consistent time until he was a goal scorer.
And this year, he started scoring goals. He had 11 goals in 30 games.
Well, right. And last year, I believe he had 25.
He had 20.
20, right. So the point is, he wasn't really a regular until he was a 20-goal scorer.
Yep.
And, you know, if you recall, the year before that, he was a scratch at times.
Yeah. And so it's one of those things where you can kind of try to evaluate and not only evaluate based on goals and find those people because, like, kind of we're pointing out right now, Andre Kasha generated play, and if he would have just gotten more minutes, more time, and not been getting scratched, maybe you would have seen that jump from him a little bit earlier.
Right. Well, anyway, all of this to say that looking ahead, I think that the Ducks definitely have some things that they can improve on. Obviously, one of those being investing more into information gathering, information synthesis, and using that to inform their decisions, both in roster construction, deployment. I mean, it's just one of those things that can help.
Talking about Andre Kasha, lockdown late night points out, can't wait to see how Kasha meshes with the young blood. I think that's going to be very interesting. I did also want to bring up, we have a couple questions that I think, unless you have something you want to touch on right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can jump into questions. I have nothing really else. We have all summer to talk about the off season.
So people, if you want to start throwing your questions into the chat, go for it. But we have a couple both in the Twitch chat and one on Twitter that I think we can get through kind of quick that are kind of fun. McCann, our good buddy McCann Sanford, asked us, when did you know the season was over? When did you know the season was over? At what point? And then he also added, I have to wake up early, so he had to bounce from the Twitch chat. But thanks for the awesome content this season. Love you guys. Going to listen in the morning. Kings suck. Go Ducks.
Yeah. Well, hey, we really do appreciate it. I mean, it's kind of a weird, bittersweet moment because on one hand, we get to have free time again on weeknights. On the other, this is something we love, and it kind of stinks that it ends this way. To answer his question here, I think that the moment I knew it was over was the Winnipeg game when they lost, I think it was 9-3 and they were down 6-0 after the first period. It was just like, this is not a good team. This is a crap team as it currently is.
Yeah.
There's no coming back from this. I think that that's when I knew when that trip, basically that Canadian trip, when they just got destroyed and pummeled every game they played.
It was the game, the trip that got Randy Carlyle fired.
Yeah, the Montreal game I think is the game where he could have been fired immediately and they chose to hold off. weird, ironic moment there. But the Winnipeg game to me. I mean, you give up. I remember I was in my kitchen, I was kind of cooking something as the game was going on. Every time I would get up, I would hear another goal, and I'd have to like run back to the TV, and I had to do this six times in a period. I was like, "Are you kidding me? Another one, another one," and I just could not believe it. And to me, that's when I just realized this is. I mean, I already knew that this team was not good and that things were going in the wrong direction, but that was the moment like they have just reached a new low, and that at that point it was truly over. That's when the nail was firmly in the coffin.
Was that the game that led to the quote from Bob Murray about not looking at making a coaching change? I think it was that game.
I might have been. I think you may be right. Yeah, I think it might have been that one.
Yeah, I think that road trip also.
What was the highlight of the season for you?
Well, wait, I want to say, I think that you're probably spot on with that. I think you maybe could have even said a little bit earlier on the very first losing streak, or not the first, the second losing streak was when we saw what this team kind of was. And I think that was a bit frustrating. So we do have a question from Kristen Hammonds from Twitter along that line saying, favorite memory from the season?
Oh, well, that goes with what I was just asking. I mean, favorite memory, I think that I really enjoyed this training camp because we had a... I mean, I guess that says a lot. I mean, I didn't mean for that to be humorous, but I enjoyed this training camp because it was... A, it was the last time in the season where it was nothing but positive. And then B, it was fun to kind of go through that whole gauntlet of evaluating players, debating over each and every prospect, seeing who would come out of it. That was probably my most enjoyable moment.
You broke me. You broke me.
I mean, I'm if I hadn't already, I'm doing it now.
Just
breaking what's left.
What was my most enjoyable moment? I mean, this season was crap. Let's be real.
To be fully honest, there really was not a stretch of this season where the games were so enjoyable that this was like, oh, there's some momentum here. That's why I said training camp, because, it was fun to kind of, training camp always has this very unique feeling where it's kind of like the first day back at school where you're tweeting about the games again and you're going to the skates and you get this weird enthusiasm about it. And I always enjoy that. And so if I'm being asked what was the highlight of the season for me, it was a good camp this year.
So I got a couple things that I can say that are favorite memory of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it happened during the season, so I should have mentioned that I got married.
Okay, well, we're talking about this actual season itself.
Damn. Come on. The fact that Randy Carlyle was no longer the coach of this team and we were rid of him. Can that be a
memory? Yeah, I guess for you as a fan, yeah.
Yeah.
Lockdown
late night says the Capitals game when we came back from 5-point deficit. I was on an airplane flying back from Australia during that game, so I can't really talk. I was getting Wi-Fi intermittently on the plane, and I kept getting notifications and was very confused.
Yeah, I don't remember that game.
So, I missed a good 10. I think I... Didn't they win all the games when I was gone?
I don't remember.
I think they won every game when I was on my honeymoon.
That period is kind of a blur because we had a lot of scheduling conflicts, and so we had CJ and George come in as relievers.
Oh. Yeah. I think they won every single game from that I was gone, though. So, yeah.
Maybe you should have stayed in Australia. Maybe the Ducks would be in the
season,
playoffs right now.
The season would have been great if I had just stayed in Australia. So,
yeah, exactly.
For those of you watching this live, though, on Twitch, start throwing your questions in the chat. For those of you watching the recorded version of this on YouTube or listening on your favorite podcast service, we do a live stream of this show after each and every game. We also, whenever we record, we'll be doing live streams over summer. So the live stream on Twitch and the YouTube videos are not going away. The video element will still be a part of this. We like the Twitch chat. We like all of you. So if you do want to interact with us live and support the show on Twitch, if you have Amazon Prime, you can support the show for free, completely free to you with Twitch Prime. All you have to do is link your Amazon account to your Twitch account, hit that subscribe button above Felix's head as Felix points above his head, trying to point to it as he's hating me for forcing him to do that. And with that, you get a special emote in the chat, a special badge next to your name, and it's a really good time. So there is a couple. There are a couple questions kind of on the same line that, let's see. Coldfire 725 said, which young player deserves the longest look in camp this season?
I mean, I think they're all pretty equal. You know, I don't think one has necessarily outshined the next so dramatically that they would deserve this long, long leash. I mean, I know that Troy Terry is going to be the natural answer for a lot of people, and he has been productive. I also think he's been given the most opportunity. I mean, again, this is maybe a little unfair because it's not as if he's being given that opportunity without reason, but... You know, Max Jones and Sam Steele don't really get all that power play time. And so to me, I think they should all just be looked at as equal footing going into next season.
Troy Terry. Troy Terry is the answer. Troy Terry is always the answer. Troy Terry is the best.
Shocker.
The best.
Shocker that you would say that.
On brand. On brand.
I mean, it's not unreasonable. I mean, if you said Troy Terry, I wouldn't like ride
right
over it.
Our good friend Lockdown Late Night Justin said, preliminary line predictions for next season. So Eric Stevens put out his article. I'm putting you on the spot. Give me your line predictions.
Oh boy. My line predictions for next season.
Yes.
So we're talking outside. So we're talking after camp or are we talking?
Yes. To start the season.
Okay. So not going into camp.
No, starting the season.
Okay. So starting next season, let's see here.
This also will show what you're thinking in terms of where the team is next year and who's moved.
Yeah, I mean, I think for next season, it's a lot of experimentation for me. I'm assuming nobody's moved because I can't predict. I'm going to Hot Take. Hot Take City.
Don't cop out.
Hot Take City because we have to leave the people a little spice for the summer. I got to heat up their summer.
There's nothing more spicy than Felix.
I'm keeping Raquel Steele Solberg together because that's the only thing that seems to have worked late in the year. I'm keeping them together. And then after that, I'm going with Jones, Getzlaff, and Terry. And then my third line, I'm going Shore. Oh, God, this gets weird.
Wait, what was the line that you just said?
Oh, man. I'm going Jones, Getzlaff, Terry.
Okay.
Jones, Getzlaff, Terry. Dude, this is going to get weird.
You still got this Richie. You still got Richie and Kasha.
This is going to get weird.
And you got Corey Perry.
And you forgot Corey Perry. And then I'm going to go with Richie, Rowney, Perry as my fourth line. And then for my third line, I'm going to go Shore. Jeez, I'm running out of centers. I guess Shore is my... Oh, Shore is going to be my center for my third line with Comtois and...
What about Rowney?
Kasha. I said Rowney.
Oh, where did you say Rowney? Sorry.
You're not listening to me.
No, I'm not. I was looking at the chat.
I said Richie, Rowney, Perry for my fourth line.
Oh, okay.
Corey Perry's a fourth liner on my balanced team. On my four lines deep
so
team.
So you made the prediction Adam Henrique is gone.
Yeah, I think he's the most likely. I think he's the easiest to move. But I'm going to go one step further.
Oh.
Because I am putting myself on the throne. I'm coronating myself.
It's Game of Thrones season. Felix just took the throne of Westeros. He's making
my
all the rules.
My blue line. Hampus Lindholm, Josh Manson, Brendan Gooley, PK Subban.
I got Felix is on board. He's on
Maybe
board.
Maybe not PK Subban. How about Jacob trade Truba. Jacob, yeah, let's go Jacob Trouba. That's more realistic. And then I'm going to go with Mahura Magna / Larson as my, just a medley of those three as my third pairing.
So lay out the deep pair one more time.
So I'm trading both Fowler. And I'm doing both. Wow. I'm trading both.
Wow.
I've seen enough. It's been a decade and people are still trying to convince me
Felix
that Cam Fowler is some, you know, we need to see more of Cam Fowler. For whatever reason, we haven't seen enough. we need one more season just to be sure. Just to be sure. Right?
Felix is wheeling and dealing.
I'm done. I'm trading him. I've kinged myself. I've crowned myself, so I'm going to use that power. Trading Cam Fowler. Trading Adam Henrique. See ya. Pack your, you know what. You're out of here. And I'm bringing in draft picks. I'm bringing in prospects. Cap relief. And maybe I'm sending a contract along with Cam Fowler to the team that I'm trading him to. Maybe a little less return, but a contract that I have to deal with.
I don't know who I'm more disappointed in right now. And I'm not disappointed in you. You just were giving me some hot takes. But Lewis in our Twitch chat says,
I'm trading both.
Lewis in our Twitch chat said, I can't wait till Game of Thrones is over because it's a trash show and I don't know why people like it.
I've never watched it, so.
Get out of here. Go watch it.
I've never watched it.
Go watch it. It's great. You're wrong. That's going to be our off-season show. We're just going to watch every episode of Game of Thrones and podcasts after it.
I am actually not just being a hot take artist. I would trade both.
All right.
Because so, I think that they have the most value on this roster.
Want my lineup, though? Want my take at it?
Yeah, so let me just go line by line so we can, like, you know, so you don't have to wheel and deal.
Fine.
So I'm going Ricard, Raquel, Steele, Silverberg as a line. Do you keep them together?
Yes.
Okay, and then my second line, I had Jones, Getzlaff, Terry. Thoughts?
Yeah, I like that because I like Jones and Terry together.
Yeah, and I like, you know what I don't love, though? Is I kind of want Kasha next to... I kind of like the idea of Jones and Kasha both next to Getzlaff. But let's just stick with it for now since we're not going to be here forever.
Sorry, say that one more time?
No, I kind of like the idea of Jones and Kasha next to Getzlaff. Just two puck retrievers, two puck hounds that have some touch.
I don't like the idea of Jones being with Kasha.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I'll just stick with my original. So Jones, Getzlaff, Terry. I feel like that's solid.
Yeah.
And then my third line, or I guess this is kind of like my 3A, 3B. I have Richie, Rowney, Perry.
Richie, Rowney. Yeah. I mean, so wait, are we just ignoring Sprong then?
So on this team, he's kind of like the extra forward. I mean, I don't, unless I put him as an extra on his off wing. And then I would have, I guess you could do Sprong, Shore, Kasha. I mean, if you wanted to do that.
Yeah, you could do that.
Just an all-skill line.
Yeah, we could.
And then this is assuming that Kessler's done and Henrique is gone.
Yeah. And I think that Henrique being gone, I completely agree with. I don't think Fowler's gone. I think if anything...
Well, again, I didn't say I think he will be. I just said if I were giving myself the power here, I would do both.
Well, I think the reason why not is that I think that they're going to try to bring in a right-handed shot, and I think if they move Henrique and bring in a right-handed shot, then they're pretty good on the D on the with their D pairs and D setup.
But then, just to be clear, their centers would then be Steele, Getzlaff, Rowney and Shore.
Steele, Getzloff, Rowney, and Shore. I mean, so
three third line centers and dependent, a second line center.
Dependent, at that point. dependent on where they draft. I think that, sure. And not even thinking Hughes or Kako, but let's say they get a Cousins and Cousins impresses, sure, and gets a draft.
I mean, yeah, sure. So, but like, even still, that's not a strength for them next season.
Or does Lundestrom take one of those spots? No space.
I mean, AHL? At that point, you have to trade a guy or you have to move a guy out.
Well, and I think that's why, knowing
Bob Murray, because obviously I'm close friends with him, so I can read his mind. I think he'd rather
have his phone number.
I think he'd rather give Lundestrom another year developing than have to make a trade for a guy who's already signed.
Well, I think, yeah.
That's just kind of what he's shown. By the way, I'm also not including Max Comtois, I think, in my list here.
Is Max Comtois going to make this team out of camp?
I mean, if he does, like, that's the thing, is he could make one of these guys expend, like, the guy who I think I'm kind of circling here, you know, if you want to play the Jaws music in your head right now, the Jaws theme music, Nick Ritchie could be in trouble. And it's weird to say because it's not like he's a problem on this roster. And I don't think that, and I think he's a good value contract, but they're just running out of room on the wings. And, you know, if you bring in a Max Comtois, there's just not enough room for him, especially if they don't trade Adam Henrique and you have to slot Shore at center.
Yeah, I could see that. Defense, I disagree. Going to what you had said on the defense. I think that it needs to be, I don't think Fowler gets moved. I just don't.
Jake, just to be clear, I didn't say I think he gets moved. I just said I would do it.
Fair enough.
I don't think he gets moved though. Yeah, I agree with you. We're on the same page there.
All right. What other questions do we have? Keep throwing questions into the chat if you've got them.
Ooh. Oh wait. So Georgie Khan has a take that he probably didn't think would actually go anywhere. He said worst take awards goes to. So let's actually do this. This is gonna be kind of fun. What do you think was your best prediction of the season? So the one that you really nailed.
I know my worst.
And what was your worst? Okay, so then give us your worst.
My worst was the fact that I said Buffalo to the conference final midseason.
Oh, no. Let's stick to the Ducks.
Stick to the Ducks. Ooh.
Yeah. So your worst take, your worst Ducks take the season. Oh. Just so we can be transparent here.
Oh. They were, none of my Ducks takes are ever bad.
Yes, of course. With the full disclosure that Jake is never wrong.
Exactly.
What were you less right about?
I think I was the least right about. Let's go Carter Rowney or Devin Shore.
Okay.
I think that they both impressed me the most.
Right.
As the season went along, and especially Shore, I think Shore really improved and kind of showed us more what he had than what we thought, or what I thought, because I was very, very down on him for the first month that he was with the Ducks. And so the thing I got the most right, Troy Terry is amazing.
Ooh, okay.
No, but actually, I should deserve some credit for being as high on Terry as I was.
I mean, if you throw enough poo at the wall.
But
you know.
I got ridiculed because of how much I got ridiculed.
if you fling enough dung at the wall.
How much I got ridiculed for my Terry opinion early on in the season.
Because he was playing like shit.
I deserve some credit.
Oh my god, he wasn't even shooting the puck.
I deserve some credit for the fact that he got a lot better as the season went my opinion on Terry.
So
is
you're like Mark
valid.
Bergevin saying he had a successful season as a GM. I moved the goalpost so far back, I was able to get past
all right,
him.
Give me yours.
Okay, so I have a couple of different ways I could go with my worst take. To no one's surprise,
hashtag
probably.
Felix was wrong.
So save the jokes. I think one of the things that I didn't see kind of falling off, I kind of just assume Ryan Getzlaff would be Ryan Getzlaff this season and would be the kind of dominant center, the point per game guy. I just kind of baked that into my predictions. He wasn't that this season. I mean, you know, there's, of course, you know, you could dive into the stats. You can maybe see if, it's not just, the fact that his production waned, maybe that it's just bad luck. But you know, even on an eye test level, I don't think Ryan Getzlaff was as noticeable this year. You know, he had 61 points in 56 games last year. This year he had 48 points in 66 games. I mean, I just don't think he was as good. And he's 33 years old. He's going to be, let's see here, he's going to be 34 by the time next season starts. And, I mean, for this team, if this team wants to get back into the playoff picture, like, that's going to need to at least, not course correct, but hold. He can't continue to slide like that. You know, because a lot of them remaining competitive in recent years has been Ryan Getzlaff still being so good. And I think he can maybe be good for another season, but that kind of gentle decline, I think that we saw it for the first time this year. And that's something I got wrong.
And what's your best take? I know what I think your best take is.
Geez, I don't know. I mean, I can't really think of something I was so gung-ho about.
It's not something you were public about that you is your best take.
My public? Oh, my God. Now I hold on. Let me think of one, and then let's see if it corresponds.
It's one that you may have said publicly, but it's something
okay,
you were adamant.
Okay, just say it. Just say it.
Kessler being done.
Oh, yeah. So I said that 2 years ago, actually. Yeah. No, I was pretty bullish amongst our staff that Kessler was done, and people really pushed back on that against me, and
I was one of them,
and I kind of just was like, no, he's done. And I think I said that last year. I think last January was when I started saying it, and it turned out to be pretty true. Yeah, so I'll go with that. Thanks, Jake. Thanks for giving me a free one, because I really couldn't think of anything there. I'm gonna go with Ryan Kessler being done.
You're welcome, my
best take.
You're welcome.
And I'm not happy to be right about that, by the way. I mean, it's not like I want his career to be over, but as far as predictions go, I think that that's probably one of the ones I got.
Lockdown late night. I don't know if you would know off the top of your head what he said overall first and second favorite games this season. I can't honestly think of one. Doesn't come to mind right away, to be honest.
Geez. So my favorite game that we covered this season, honestly, I think that my favorite games, like if I'm just going to kind of group them together, I think that my favorite games were the ones really early on where we were kind of really keen on seeing what these young kids could do in the lineup. And then on the flip side, the games at the end of the season where we were kind of back into that mode of just talent evaluation.
Yeah.
It almost felt like we were just scouting these games. And that's, I think, where I enjoy watching, you know, at its finest, if I'm not a fan, is if just when I'm kind of looking for patterns, looking for skills with these players. And so I would say that those are my favorite pockets of the season. And then as far as a specific game, I don't really have one off the top of my head, but those were my favorite times of the season.
I think for me, honestly,
which coincidentally were not the double digit losing streaks.
I think for me, honestly, the favorite games of the season all have to do kind of with pod related stuff, simply because of whether it was different things we did on the podcast. Because quite honestly, like I said, this season was crap. And so a lot of my joy and enjoyment from the Ducks came from talking with Felix and interacting with all of you. So, I mean, for me, probably that LA game where we had the watch party and had the drunk pod, the very first big drunk pod against the Penguins, where you and I got very, very drunk that night.
Yeah, I think my highlight of the highlights of this season were probably the drunk pods. Maybe just as easily the lowlights were the hangovers with them.
Matt and Justin. Matt, Justin, and Bonnie and Bob. They're the biggest culprits.
My liver will never be the same.
You guys ruined it. Speaking of Matt, diehard 24 fan 24. So Matt said, question, you guys mentioned on Twitter about Richie imploding in the third period once again and us having so many wingers. What do you think we could get in return for him?
Not a whole lot. I mean, I don't think he's worth trading.
That's why I don't. Yeah, I agree.
I think he has more value on this roster, but I mean, a third rounder, a second rounder. I mean, I don't think you're getting a roster player for him unless it's some type of hockey trade, which is usually a bad trade. I don't know. I don't think he has any value as of this point on the trade market.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of why he doesn't get moved. Stevie D on the topic of Richie said, can Richie play any other position? I just like him all around.
If he could play center, he'd be interesting.
Yeah, I don't think he plays center then.
No, he's not a good enough skater.
No. Eric the H asked, how many goals do you think his boy Kasha scores next season?
I think he's around 20, 25. By the way, Silverberg tonight setting a career high with 24 goals.
Yeah. So what? Sorry, what was that?
I think he hits about 20 to 25.
I say 30. Season.
Nah.
Going out on a limb, 30.
I think he's going to get hurt.
30.
I hate to predict that. 30. I feel like he's 30. One of those guys who just misses time.
30. NJ Doubles Fan 68 says, who will be a surprise call-up with Eakins next year if Eakins is the head coach?
I don't think there's going to be any surprise call-ups. I think everyone that can be called-up is going to be up. Yeah. So my question for you, and we should maybe start wrapping this up, Ryan Getzlaff next season, over under 50, do you think he hits 60 points next season?
Yeah.
I think
a full.
So that's a 12 point rebound.
I think the qualifier is if he's healthy and plays in 70 plus games.
I feel like he's not though. I think,
like I said, the qualifier
he hasn't played 70 plus games in 2 years.
Yeah.
So maybe next season is the one. But assuming he misses 10 to 15 games, which is kind of becoming the norm for him.
If he's at 70 games, I could see him being over 60 points.
Okay.
So
realistically, he's not.
Lewis asked, how many chicken nuggets did JC end up eating? I think it was over 30.
That's a lot.
And I think CJ and I each were in the over 15 range. So we ended up taking down 60 or 70 McNuggets. So, Jesus, yeah. Brutal. I think that's probably going to do it for questions, though. So really quickly, before we start getting into our plugs and different things like that, I do want to say something. I know you'll probably want to say a few things, but I do want to say a sincere thank you to everyone out there. Felix and I kind of took a little bit of a leap this year with adding the Twitch element, and there were some learning curves early on, and then adding in YouTube, and adding in Patreon, and basically everything we've kind of added this season. And you all have been there supporting us, helping us, being there for us. And essentially, we wouldn't be doing this without all of you. And so from the bottom of my heart, I really need to give a sincere thank you. We love all of you. You guys make us doing this worth it. You guys support us. You guys help us. You guys in the Twitch chat, you guys that support us on Patreon, the people on Twitter, everyone around. You guys make it so we want to keep doing this and keep pushing and keep getting better and better. So thank you so much. And there's going to be more to come and more bigger and better things pretty much.
Absolutely. I mean, it kind of sucks to go out this way.
Yeah.
But really, I mean, we kind of, you know, for us, we again basically do this as a hobby. I mean, yeah. But Jake and I both have day jobs. Some might say we should stick to our day jobs, but based on our opinions. But really, I mean, we just do this because we love it. We're both huge hockey fans. And we do this because we love talking about the game, breaking it down. We love interacting with everyone. And we're just realizing that we have something special here. And
yep.
We can keep taking it to that next level. And that started last season.
Yep.
And this season, it kind of took on a new form. And I think it's only up from here.
Yep, and we set some goals going into the season, just kind of internally, us two, just kind of talking it out, and we've kind of surpassed all of them. We wanted over 100 podcast reviews. We're over 100. We wanted to hit a certain amount on Patreon, and that's why we had that stretch goal, and we crushed that now. We wanted to make sure we were over 1,000 listens an episode, and basically every single episode from this season has been well over 1,000 listens on audio format. And so that's on top of the YouTube videos we get views now. So all of this is just a big thank you to all of you for the support that you've given us this year and interacting with us.
Yeah. And the last couple things I want to say is that, you know, I myself am an avid podcast listener. I listen to a multitude of podcasts, and they help me get through the day. I mean, they help me, you know,
yeah,
get through tasks. They help me get through whatever it is, you know, whatever it is, right? And so thank you for allowing us to be a part of your day. I mean, that's really what it comes mm-hmm. down to. You have, in this day and age, where in terms of media, sports media, you have all the choices in the world for you to choose us, you know, whether it's to listen to us one time, for you to listen to us twice a week, for you to listen to us every single episode, for you to be a Patreon supporter. whatever it is, that 1 minute that you listened or more, we can't really thank you enough for that, because we understand as listeners ourselves of shows what that means, that we're a part of your day. So again, thank you. Really do appreciate it. But hey, the show goes on. We're not going anywhere. Like, we're not at a funeral here.
No, but
we ain't going anywhere. But it is always a good moment to reflect. But look, there's plenty more to come.
And this has been a very, very big season, I think, for this show.
And the draft is coming up, so we have a lot for you coming there. Free agency is coming up. There's going to be a lot to talk about this summer. We are going to scale back, because I think that we are all going to benefit from a little time off here. But for the hard-hitting stuff, for the news, for, you know, the big events, we are going to have you covered every step of the way. But I think we can all benefit from all being a little away for a period of time, you know, just a little bit.
A little rest and relaxation. Like we said, there may be some things coming with the goals. We'll see what we're going to do. We got some things in the works.
Absolutely. So on that note, guys, thanks a lot for listening. Really do appreciate it. If you've been enjoying the show, make sure to leave a rating and a review on the Apple Podcast app. Make sure to check us out on all the other podcast platforms, Stitcher, SoundCloud. We're on there if you're not part of the Apple ecosystem, as they call it.
And if you want to watch the video version of this after the fact and watch us get all mopey and emotional as we said those sincere thank yous, you can watch the video version of this on YouTube. If you search Anaheim Calling SB Nation, you can find the video there. Please, if you want to help support the show in another way, subscribe to the channel, like a video, comment. I do see all the comments on there. So, Logan, I know you are a frequent commenter. I see everything you type. I watch for it. So throw some stuff in there if you want to, and I'll make sure to comment. So, yep.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and also, sorry, we're adding on some more thank yous, but thank you to everyone also who has come up and said hi. If you're ever at a game and see me or Felix, don't be afraid to come up and say hello. We love meeting people that listen to the show, that interact. At the end of the day, we do this for you, like we've said, and the more that we can talk, the better. And so to everyone that we've met this season and to everyone we're going to meet in the future, thank you.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you want more content, you know, if you want a broader spectrum of topics, I definitely recommend that you subscribe to our Patreon page. I think that the Patreon page is actually going to have a nice little growth this summer. You know, in the absence of the regular pods, I think we're going to find a way to grow that a little bit. No specifics on that, but I think now is a good time to invest. It's $5 a month for two additional pods, as well as a patron exclusive Discord chat where you get to interact with us and help us choose future topics, help us make suggestions just on how we can improve, talk hockey, whatever it is, we've got you covered. So definitely check that out. That's patreon.com/acpod. And finally, you can check us out on social media. Jake is on there at reindeergames91. I'm on Twitter at felix_sicard. That's anaheimcalling.com at anaheimcalling on Twitter. That is going to do it for us, guys, tonight. That is going to do it for us this season, and we will talk to you at the next pod. Have a good one.
Goodbye, everyone. Bye!
Goodbye, everybody.